Hi, good evening, Erev Tov, everyone here, fellow Mazinim. We're continuing our series, The Centurions, the 5th century of the Common Era, sponsored as always by Yona, by Becky and Avi Katz, Lina Shmas Yona Ben Rabari Leib. I welcome all of you, especially a nice selection of Krasanskis here tonight, my parents and my brother, and everyone else who's come. So the 5th century saw a major undertaking. The major undertaking of the 5th century of the Jewish people was the publication of the Talmud. It was a work so massive and so brilliant that it's still a little hard for us to wrap our minds around it. If you think about it, the Talmud, the Daf Yomi, takes more than 7 years, or 7.5 years to complete the 2,700 pages of the Talmud. So it's almost impossible to imagine what it was like to sift through all the material and organize it and write it and edit it, and at the same time continue to teach it and study it. We're looking at the finished product, but producing the finished product was mind-boggling. So you have to understand as well the current of the times. Why then and why there was the Talmud published? How did this massive project come about? And the person who was primarily responsible for the Talmud, whose radiance shone over the Jewish people of the 5th century and beyond, was the giant and our centurion of the evening, Rav Ashi. Continuing a noted Jewish tradition, the lives of Rava, we discussed last week, and Rav Ashi slightly overlapped. So the Gemara says in Kiddush, Daf Ayin Beis Amud Beis, Kishemes Rava, Nolad Rav Ashi. When Rava died, Rav Ashi was born. Lamedcha Shein Tzadik Nifta Min Ha'olam Achenivra Tzadik Amoso. To teach us that one Tzadik does not pass from this world until there's another Tzadik like him. Shenemar V'zarach HaShemesh U'Vah HaShomesh. The sun rises, the sun sets. The Jewish people are never left leaderless. It only feels like it sometimes. But in fact, it's not so. So Rav Ashi, according to tradition, was born the year of Rava's death, around the year 353 of the Common Era. But there are others who maintain that Rav Ashi lived into his 90s, and we know when he died, so he had to have been born earlier, about 20 years earlier. So that would have meant that when Rava died, that's when Rav Ashi assumed Rava's role. And that's Vizar HaShemesh Uvah HaShemesh. Rav Ashi learned from a wide variety of teachers, fulfilling the Gemara's mandate in Avodah Zarah Daf Yotes Amud Aleph, Kol Halomei Torah Merav Echad, Ein Ora Siman Bracha LaOlam. A person who learns Torah from just one Rebbe, he never sees real blessing from his Torah study. You have to have a greater variety of exposure to different styles in Torah to be a complete, mature Talmud Chacham. To limit oneself to one gadol, so that with one Talmud Chacham, it becomes very narrow. And unfortunately, it's more of a trend today and than it was in the past. In the past, I know great Talmud Chachamim who in fact excelled in that. They went to learn with a variety of other great Talmud Chachamim, imbibing the style of each. This Rav Ashi did. The only caveat the Gemara has is for Svara, one should learn from different teachers, meaning to learn how to analyze, to learn how to think. So there you need a multitude of Rebbeim. When it comes to what the Gemara calls Gemara, meaning the text itself, they should have just one Rebbe, so you'll have the correct Girsa, and not be able, if you don't have the correct Girsa, then Svara is not going to matter. So to get the Mesorah, you need one Rebbe. But to learn how to think, you need a few, at least. Rav Ashi was like that. Thus, to give you an example, that same Gemara Kiddushin continues, discussing the issue of whether or not certain lands require investigation, or the residents of certain lands require investigation as to their fitness to marry Jews. So Chachamim held that every land is kosher for Jews. We don't have to investigate it. If a Jew comes from whatever territory, it suffices. Rav Ashi interjected, as opposed to Meir's opinion. Rav Ashi interjected and he said, V'horei be'rav kahana lo masne hachi, u be'rav papa lo masne hachi, u be'rav zivid lo masne hachi. He says that's not how they taught, like the Chachamim, in the yeshivos of Rav Zvid and Rav Papa and Rav Kahana, because in fact Rav Ashi had learned with all of them, with Rav Zvid and with Rav Papa and with Ameimar and from Nachum Bar Yitzchak and with his Rebbe Muvhak, his primary teacher, who in fact was Rav Kahana in the yeshiva of Pum Nahara. Pum Nahara was a town, obviously, mouth of the river on one of the two great rivers of Babylon. There's several areas in which Rav Ashi explicitly mentions what he saw from his Rebbe Rav Kahana that's come down to our day. One, the Gemara says in Brachos Daf Lamed Tesamid Beis, Rav Ashi says, Chazina Leila Rav Kahana Denokit Tarte Ubotzachada. He saw Rav Kahana on Shabbos, he would take both challahs and make a brach on them and then just cut one, put one down. And in fact, that's our minhag also, to hold two and then cut one. What Gemara says on Shabbos, Daf Yudam Ad Aleph, during an Eis Tzara, Rav Ashi says he saw Rav Kahana put his hands together in Davin, Ka'avda Kame More, putting your hands together in Davin, as opposed to having them loose or on your hips or some other way, like a servant before his master, which of course on Yemei Chol is our, the style of Davening as well. It was in Pum Nahara that Rav Ashi became a very close Talmud of Rav Kahana, a member of his Beis Din, until he moved back to Sura, or a suburb of Sura. Sura is located west of the Euphrates in southern central Iraq. That famous suburb of Sura was called Maso Machsio, or some say Machasio, Machasio City, Machsio City. Remember that Pumbedisa had been the yeshiva through Abaya's tenure. Pumbedisa is what's today known as Fallujah, which has been a hotbed in Iraq for a number of years. Some cities we know, the traditions are extant. Sura, we don't know. We know roughly where it is, but there's no real city on its ancient location. But Pumbedisa, yes. Nineveh also. Nineveh, which is in the Kurdish territory, is the town of Mosul, which is also, in fact, there are old graves there that date from when Jews lived in Nineveh in the time of the Gemara as well. In any event, Pumbedisa was the yeshiva. Through Abaya's death, Rava moved it to Mechoza, but Sura, that was a legendary yeshiva for centuries already, that had fallen in status after the death of Rav Chisda in the year 309. But now Rav Ashi moved to restore Sura to its former glory, if not exceeding it altogether, and that it was in Sura, or in Machsia, that the great undertaking of the Talmud would take place. Not much is really known about Rav Ashi's personal life, certainly not his early years, except for the fact that he learned wherever he could, from whomever he could. Gemara says he was the son-in-law of Rami Bar Abba. He's also mentioned a number of times in the Gemara. Some of his children are mentioned in the Gemara as well. At his initiative and through his leadership, Machsia became a center of learning in Bavel. Just like Rava had done to Mechoza, Rav Ashi did to Machsia, with special days that the whole community came to learn. He moved the Reish Galusa's Regel, Rigla the Reish Galusa, where the Reish Galusa, the exilarch, would address the people twice a year on a variety of issues. It was by dint of his own personality that he moved that from Pumbedisa to Machsia, and the Reish Galusa came as well. And Jews from all over Bavel would come to Machsia for those special days, especially Nisan and Tishrei. When the shul, the yeshiva in Machsia, began to show signs of wear and tear, in fact, cracks appeared in the wall, the Gemara says in Baba Basra Daf Gimel Amud Beis that Rav Ashi moved his bed into the collapsing building while they were building the new yeshiva building. As he slept there for quite a long time, suffering the effects of heat and the rain, he felt that if nothing was there, then people would not be as enthusiastic to build. But as long as he was there, people would hasten to build the new shul, which in fact they did, a very tall and magnificent structure that was an honor to Torah. And Rav Ashi did not move out until all the gutters and piping in the new building were finished, lest, again, people lose interest. It was the tallest building in town, as the law requires, that a shul be, but in the exile, especially in this part of the world, it's very difficult to achieve. And Gemara says that any town that the shul is not the tallest building is subject to destruction. So Rav Ashi claimed credit for the fact that Machzi was not destroyed. Shabbos Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Ano avdei l'masa Machzi de lo charvo. It's because of me that Machzi was never destroyed, because we built the shul as the tallest building in town. So Gemara raises a gentle question, v'hacharva, but it was destroyed. Every place where Jews lived in exile has been destroyed. So Gemara says, yes, it's true, but may also avon l'charva. It was not destroyed because of that sin, of not having a tall shul, but some other sin. Rav Ashi is responsible for one of the most famous customs, one of the most misunderstood customs as well in Jewish life. The Gemara says in Brachos Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph, Rav Ashi Ovad Hilula Livrei. He made a wedding for his son. Chazinu L'Rabbanu Dehava Kabad Chaytuva. He saw the Chachamim acting frivolously at the wedding. You hang around the bar a little too long, and that's what happens, even to the greatest Chachamim. So Rav Ashi Aisi Kasav Dezugisa Chivarta V'Tavar Kamayu. He took a crystal glass, fine crystal, smashed it, v'iatsivu, and the people, the mood was right away dampened. And Tosa says that's how it started, in order that there shouldn't be excessive frivolity at weddings, and this became normative at Jewish weddings. And Tosa notes that a later date was associated with the churban, zechel churban, but when Rav Ashi did it, there's nothing against someone else did it as well. When he did it, it had nothing to do with the churban, just in fact to induce that more somber mood. It's, you know, often belied when the glass is broken at weddings, except when I officiate, people yell at Mazel Tov afterwards, which is the exact opposite. Is Zeichel Churban, they should be crying, not yelling at Mazel Tov. So I'm always very mocked that the glass is broken in the middle of it in Meshkacher, so people don't start yelling at Mazel Tov in the middle. They hear the song, and the song finishes, and then they yell at Mazel Tov afterwards. Gemara Megillah, Vav Amud Beis notes, and this really sums up the greatness of Rav Ashi, Miyamos Rebbe V'ad Rav Ashi, from the time of Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi until Rav Ashi, Lo Matzinu Torah U'Gedula B'Makom Echad. We don't find the greatness in Torah and greatness in secular leadership in one place. In other words, those people are few and far in between, those who have greatness in Torah and greatness in leadership that's recognized both by the people and by the secular authorities, from Rebbe until Rav Ashi. And it's because those two had those capacities that they were able to do what they did, Rebbe in the Mishnah and Rav Ashi in the Talmud. So Gemara here says, "Velo, no, v'ha'ava Huna Bar Nason." What about Huna Bar Nason? He was the Reish Galusa, and he was also a great Talmud Chacham too. So Gemara says, "Shiny Huna Bar Nason de Mechiv Hava Chayef Le Rav Ashi." Huna Bar Nason is different because while Rav Ashi was alive, he was subservient. He, the Reish Galusa, was subservient to Rav Ashi. And so it was Rav Ashi who very often represented the Jewish people before the Persian rulers, with whom he had very good relations. He was also very wealthy in the lumber business, Gemara says, and other businesses as well. And he was extremely humble. And one method that he used, I suppose, both for purposes of Talmud Torah and to cultivate the right impression in society, was to enlist the people's input, especially their expertise, in halachic questions. So the Gemara says in Sanhedrin of Zayin Beis, Rav Ashi ki hava osi treifta lekamei, when Rav Ashi would have a questionable piece of meat come before him, or animal that might have had some fatal disease, machmifu maisi lehu lechu tabochi demosa machzio, he would gather all the butchers who had expertise in what disease is fatal and what is not, and they would all evaluate the animal together. And he did this for a particular reason. Omar ki hechi dilimatyon shiba mikishura, so as to take a chip off the beam that's on my back. Meaning, if it's treif, someone loses an animal, it's an expensive loss. So rather than have it all on his head, it's then a shared loss. The people shouldn't say he's lording it over others, but he and the experts in the field evaluated it together. Rav Ashi was the Rosh Yeshiva of the reborn and slightly relocated Surah for close to 60 years, which is a long time to hold any one position, having assumed a position according to one count when he was just shy of 20. According to the other, he lived into his 90s. He was a little older, but suffice it to say, he lived a very long life. And it was one of those rare times in Jewish history when the acknowledged Gadol Hador personally knew and interacted with all the other great Talmidei Chachamim of the generation. The Jews in Eretz Yisrael, by and large, now were finished. The community was very small, and nothing much was being produced. So all the Torah giants were in Bavel, and they all were subservient to and had deep respect for Rav Ashi. Added to this is a very interesting phenomenon, unique among the sages of the Talmud. Of the more than 1,200 times Rav Ashi has mentioned the Talmud, rarely is he cited in the context of a machlokes. Now, a part of it, I'm sure, is because he was the editor, but nonetheless, it's rare. You have early on some machlokes of Ravina and Rav Ashi, Ravina the contemporary, not the successor of Rav Ashi. But almost always the Gemara will say, Omar Rav Ashi, which is a statement that stands alone. Where if it says Rav Ashi Omar, it means he's responding to something that someone had said earlier, a few generations earlier, Psak, a Pshat on a Pasuk, and the Gemara will quote it, and the Gemara will say, Rav Ashi Omar, he had a different opinion, and that was his opinion. Or you find very often, Omar Le Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi said to someone else, or Boy Rav Ashi, a question that he asked on someone. But very rarely is he found as part of a bilateral machlokes. So now we understand why the Gemara says in Bava Metzia, Daf Peivav, Amud Aleph, Rav Ashi veRavina Sof Horah. Rav Ashi and Ravina the second, they were the end of Horah, the end of teaching, the end of the teaching of the Talmud, V'simonach, the Pasuk in Tehillim, Aravo Mikdashi Kel, until I come to the sanctuary of God, Avina Lachrisam, there I will understand their end. I think Mark says it's a play on words. Mikdashi and Avina sound a little like Ravashi and Ravina, especially if you slur your words. What does it mean that Ravina and Ravashi were so far off? The Talmud was the culmination of 3 centuries of discussions on the Mishnah by the Amoraim, of whom only a fraction, 2,200, are mentioned by name in the Talmud, but there were thousands and thousands of Amoraim. So although not much is written about the Talmud itself and its publication, there's enough in the Gemara that we can piece together how this work was composed, and in fact Rav Sheragon goes into it in a little greater depth. So Talmud Bavli is the account of the discussions on the Mishnah dating from the time of Rebbe, but incorporating the teachings of many earlier sages. In his Igeres, Rav Sheragon will later write that after Rebbe's time and through Rav and Shmuel, Rav and Abaye, etc., Itosva Hora Dora Achar Dora, every generation added its teachings, new applications to what came before, until the time of Rav Ashi, and then Ravina, who died in 475, was a younger contemporary of Rav Ashi. That is when we consider the Talmud roughly finished, or roughly the end of the Talmudic era, although emendations will be made for more than a century thereafter. So how did it come about? Of the 63 Masechtos and Shas, only 37 have a Talmud Bavli. Most of Seder Zeraim and some of Kachim and most of Taharos do not have a Bavli on them. The Bavli was focused on things that were only practical, relevant. So everything related to Karbanos or Trumas and Maestros or Tahara, Tuma Tahara, they did not discuss at any great length. These discussions, primarily of Rav and Shmuel, of Abaye and Rava and their Tamidim, were the subject of the intensive Talmud Torah that was overseen by Rav Ashi in Machzia on a systematic basis. And this is how they did it. Rav Ashi institutionalized the Yachid Kalos. Yachid Kalos was an older institution that went back to the early days in Bavel. Jews would take off, basically, Pesach time and Tishrei time, and go to where the leading yeshivos were, the leading Talmid Chachamim, and they'd spend the month learning because of the Yom Tov, and you couldn't do a lot of work anyway. So that existed. What Rav Ashi did is gave those two learning sessions a particular focus. So I quote from Rav Shrier ago, "Dehochi tapinu rabbonim lemaste b'chal shoso v'shoso tartin misech yoso hein choser v'hein yoser." Every Yarchet Kalo, Rav Ashi determined that every year they would do two mesechtos at each of the Yarchet Kalo. Two mesechtos. More or less, because each mesecht is of differing lengths. The Hara Talmudic Kole Betlosin Shinin. So this way, they did four mesechtos a year. There's 60 mesechtos in Shas. So remember, Mesechas Nezikin includes the three Bavos. Baba Kama, Metzia, and Basra. It's one, really one Masechta, quite long. You'll have to see him for over a year in that Masechta. And Sanhedrin and Makos were also together. They had really 60 Masechtas. They were learned two Masechtas in Nisan, two Masechtas in Tishrei. They do this every year. So it means that over the course of 30 years, wait a second, I'm sorry, there were one Masechta. Strike that. One Masechta in Nisan, one Masechta in Tishrei, and so over the course of 30 years, they would finish all of Shas, all 60 Masechtos. V'chevan de Rav Ashi molach l'karov shitin shenin, because Rav Ashi was the Rosh Hashiva almost 60 years, ha'chehavitrei mahadurei, they did the whole cycle twice, u'shchiv b'shnas tovshin lamedches. Rav Ashi died in the year 427 of the common era. So it comes out that each Masechta was reviewed twice systematically. They would announce the Masechtos to come each time, and people would prepare their questions. They think about the area. They go through the Mishnayos. They go through the teachings that had been preserved in notebooks. And this way, over the course of Rav Ashi's tenure in Machzio, they were able to produce, for the most part, the framework of the entire Talmud Bavli. And it happened there for two cycles, two 30-year cycles. It's a long time to do anything. Now again, the Gemara hints at this just one time. In Baba Basra, Daf Kuf Nun Zayin of days, discussing a particular area, the Gemara says, "B'madura kamadur avashi omar lan hofi, u'madura basur avashi omar lan ba'ampe achari." In the first cycle, Rav Ashi taught this. In the second cycle, he taught something else. Which, of course, nothing wrong with that. Rashbam explains there, Kishachaza limudo pamshnio. When he reviewed it the second time, he had a different shot in the area. And then he goes on, Rashbam does, Nimtza b'tshuvos Rav Hai, u'v'perish Rabbeinu Chananel, Rav Ashi choya shishim shono, he lived, or he served there 60 years, u'v'chol shono mechaza limudo b'shnei chodshe akal, nisa b'tishrei, they'd review the learning in those 2 months, u'sheigiu shloshim shono siyem kol limudo, every 30 years they would finish, and they had another set of 30 years, that's Madura Kamo, that's Madura Basra. Just like, some 7 centuries later, Rashi's students would write down his teachings, but also with different nuances. It won't always be the same. That's what you had sometimes. Tosfos will quote from Rashi's Talmidim, Perish HaKuntras, they recorded in notebooks, but very often the language that Tosfos quotes is similar to Rashi's, but not identical. Because Talmidim wrote it in different ways, and Rashi taught it in different ways. Every time you learn something, there are always new ideas, new formulas, new modes of analysis. You always need a fresh approach. This came out just a few weeks ago. There's a fellow who publishes Halachic Positions of Rabbi Soloveitchik, and he just published, I think, the 5th volume. And one of the old Talmidim said that a number of things in that 5th volume differ with his own recollection of what the Rav had said, to which the answer came, of course, because each time he learned an area, he liked to look at it as if it was the first time. So therefore you get paskin one way the first time, another way 20 years later. The same thing with Rashi, and the same thing with Rav Ashi, and that's how Gedolei Torah understand the process of learning. It's not as if they're going to come, you know, Shabbos is Sunday, or it's also is Mutter. That's not it. But it's understanding the details and the applications that are going to change. Now, this process was begun by Rav Ashi, and the basic format and the texts were assembled, as with the Mishnah, we discussed a few weeks ago. Private notebooks had recorded discussions, and they were used. These were invaluable, and they often traced the thought process of the Shir itself. For the next 1,000 years almost, the handwritten copies of the Talmud were indispensable and invaluable to Jewish life. Very difficult to procure, but not that durable because of the technology of the time, just ink and paper, and the wickedness of various foes who almost immediately began burning the Talmud in a variety of places. The Talmud is seemingly, certainly to the outsider, one long discussion, often with tangents that are mystifying to the novice, but with an internal order that's breathtaking. One of the ingenious tactics, Rav Ashi actually had two, but one of the ingenious tactics is to have a discussion that transcends generations, as in cases by the hundreds where an earlier Amora is said to hold like a later one, when a very familiar locution of the Gemara, Omar Loch, that is to say, someone long deceased, answers the question of an Amora who lived a century or two later, as if to say you ask a question on a limud of Rav, Rav died 200 years ago, Omar Loch Rav, if Rav were alive, he would have said this and that. In this way, the ideas of the Talmud are unlimited in scope, and ideas can be shared from generation to generation, questions raised and answered, and the Amita Shel Torah uncovered. It was really Rav Ashi also who added a style to the Talmud that helps in its comprehension. Mesavei, Ibayelahu, Viraminhu, Teku, etc. So we understand the flow, we understand when a question is being raised, when Misayeya, when the supporting passage is being raised. Now, obviously, the task of compiling this material took many decades and continued long after Rav Ashi's death. It would seem it took, all told, close to 100 years until it reached its almost final form in the year 475 of the Common Era. Every area of life is scrutinized in the Talmud. Each of the Tarag Mitzvos, the civil law, family life, marital law, bracha, Shabbos, Yom Tovim, the human psyche, and occasional medical advice, as well as interspersed in the Gemara, regular passages of Agadah. Agadah is nothing less than the philosophy of Yadus related in the form of stories, parables, and commentaries on Tanakh. And all this was based on notes that were kept, or an oral transmission, and all of this was put into the Talmud with such precision that every word and every phrase is subject to analysis and scrutiny by later generations. Even the order itself is analyzed for hints. Why is this subject placed here, not elsewhere? There's a few cases, I think, off the top of my head in Nazir and Sota. Why are they juxtaposed? Beis HaMaral discusses it in the Sota, I think. So the word itself became sacred, and the very act of learning became not a pragmatic means of understanding right and wrong, or what you can do, what you can't do, but an act of Avodas Hashem of the highest order. In the language of the Baal HaTanya, a person studies Talmud, probes Machshavto Yisbarach, the very thoughts of God. It's interesting that the Rambam counts only 40 generations from Moshe Rabbeinu to Rav Ashi. It doesn't sound like a lot. The generation of Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah and then expounded it through the completion of the Talmud. So 40 generations spanned 18 centuries, 1,807 years to be precise, from Maimon Har Sinai received the Torah until the completion of the Talmud, 1,807 years. The Talmud was accepted by all Jews in Ravina's time as authoritative and binding. That's what it means, Rav Ashi, Ravina, Sof Hora. It is to say every subsequent discussion on the Talmud has to be based on something else in the Talmud. Nothing else can be added to it. The Rambam writes in his Hakdama to the Mishnah, Harei kol mi she'omar acharov ein mataroso elo havanas divrehem shechibru bilvad. Anyone who comes after the Talmud, their whole objective is only to understand the words that were written in the Talmud. So what changed in Rav Ashi's lifetime? Why now? Why did he decide to undertake this great project? Rabbeinu Bachya, in his commentary on Shmos, Perek Lamed Dalid, analogizes the time of Rebbe and Rav Ashi. And he says as follows, I'll read a brief passage. Rabbeinu HaKadosh Shechibra HaMishnah V'Limed Osam B'Rabim V'Ksavu HaKol B'Yamav Rabbi Yudah HaNasi, who composed the Mishnah and taught it publicly and wrote down everything in his lifetime, his whole intent was that the Torah should not be forgotten. Because he saw evil proliferating in the world, and the Jewish people had begun to be scattered in the exile. Now it's interesting, because in Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi's time, things were very tranquil. It wasn't a time of persecution, on the contrary. In Rebbe's time, the Jewish people lived quite well. Rebbe was very close with the Roman Emperor. So it wasn't a time of persecution. But nonetheless, Rebbe knew what came before, and also knew what would come afterwards. Because he saw what would follow, al kein hutalo, or at least he sensed what would follow, al kein hutalo lasos kein, it was permitted to him to write down what would otherwise be oral, eis lasos lashem eferet arsecha. Sometimes you have to violate the detail in the Torah in order to save the whole system. V'chasa v'chiber ha-mishnah shitar shabalpeh, and therefore he wrote the Mishnah, which is the oral Torah, notes on the Torah. That's why it's Mishnah, Mishnah meaning Shnia, it's second to the Torah, shivichsav, and it's similar to the Torah, Ben Abachya says, Ruba Lashon HaKodesh, Tzach Ketar shivichsav. The Mishnah was written in clear, precise Hebrew. Nonetheless, acharei chein, nisma'ato ha-chochmo, wisdom began to diminish, the katzur halavavos, our intellects declined in their sophistication, the capacity. The amdu Ravina v'Ravashi, the chibra Talmud to perish a Mishnah, and they, Ravina Ravashi, composed the Talmud, a commentary on the Mishnah. Ki l'rov chochmas Rabbeinu Hakadosh, the chochmas b'nei doro, hoya perish haTorah etzlam nivuror pashut mitoch a Mishnah. It's interesting. He says that the great wisdom of Rebbe and his generation was such that all they needed was that brief paragraph. What's the Mishnah? You could have the whole Mishnah in one small volume. All they needed was that those few sentences, and that would be sufficient to describe a whole area. And they knew, just looking at that, what it meant. They could extrapolate from it. Lahavdil, someone who knows, can look at a box score and know the whole game. Who did well, who did poorly. And it's all numbers there. So similarly, maybe it's not Lavdil. Similarly, that's what the Mishnah was. From those few sentences, they could deduce the entire range of halachos that were appropriate. Everything was clear to Rebbe's generation. Eitzel Doros Ravina Ravashi Haya Omok V'Sosin Od. As the generations went on, it became too profound, too abstruse, and closed. You have that phrase hundreds of times in the Talmud. They looked at the Mishnah, they didn't understand it, and so the Gemara will say the Mishnah is missing something. There's a lacuna in the Mishnah, and this is what it means to teach. It doesn't mean the text of the Mishnah is deficient. It means for an early generation they knew what it meant, but the later generations did not. They had to deduce what it meant by adding words to the Mishnah. It's not that the Mishnah was missing anything. Rather, it's only because our intellects are deficient, our learning was deficient, because they did not achieve the level of the Chacham of the Mishnah. And that's why Ravina Ravashi made a perish on the Mishnah, the Talmud, Uveru Svekos HaMishnah, and they explained the doubts, the uncertainty, the questions that were on the Mishnah, the Erichu Lashonam, and it was much longer than the Mishnah. To them, the Mishnah was closed. They had to open it up to their society. The truth is, what Rebbe saw in the second century of the Common Era was even worse than the fifth. Remember that the Roman Empire itself would collapse in the fifth century, in the year 476, after a decline and fall of more than a century. Rome ceased to be a real city already in 410 after it was sacked by the Visigoths, but already in the late 300s, as Christians struggled to come to grips with the breakdown of their spiritual center, Jewish communities were already targeted. In Antioch, in Alexandria, Jews were massacred. So even though in Babel the situation was calm for a few decades, at the beginning of Rav Ashi's tenure, Rav Ashi also, just like Rebbe, had very good relations with the king, Yazdegerd I. Nonetheless, Rav Ashi saw exactly what Rebbe did. It's now in this situation of tranquility that we have to put in print what otherwise might be lost the next time a wave of persecution comes. This king Yazdegerd had flirted with Christianity, but he remained a Zoroastrian. There would be a time when the two cultures would wage very bitter wars in which the Jews would be caught up. Yazdegerd greatly respected Rav Ashi, but it wouldn't last. So again, it's a classic situation where the prescience of Gedolei Torah salvaged what would have been a catastrophe and preserved the Jewish people. Rav Ashi began the composition of the Talmud during this time of tranquility, but already in his lifetime, Yazdegerd I had died. Civil war broke out in Bavel between his children, his sons, different competitors to the throne. And it was just a couple of decades later, one of his successors, Yazdegerd II, who viciously persecuted the Jews. Rav Ashi was gone now about 20 years already. Yazdegerd persecuted the Jews, famously banning the observance of Shabbos, banning the recitation of Kriyat Shema. That was the era when the government would dispatch guards to shul to make sure that they would not recite the Shema. It was an affront to the Zoroastrian pluralistic faith. That's when Jews started reciting Kriyat Shema in the early part of Shacharis, after Birchas HaShachar, and during the Kedusha and Musaf as well, for the Jews who came late to Shul. Their descendants are still coming late to Shul. Even though Yazdegerd II was killed, his immediate successor was no better, and a famine in Persia did not help matters. So it's prophetic, really, that Rav Ashi began this historic process and almost saw to its conclusion, just like Rebbe, who also perceived Eis Lasos Lashem, Hefer Torah Secha. Rav Ashi took advantage of the relative calm and prosperity of his early years to commence this extraordinary work, which involved hundreds and hundreds of Talmidei Chachamim and regular Jews who came to learn twice a year, this work that shapes and preserves Jewish life until today. Well, how great was Rav Ashi? The Gemara says in Moikon Daf Chav Chesam et Aleph that the Malach HaMavis himself, the angel of death, came to see Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi itchazelei b'shuka. He saw the angel of death coming to him in the marketplace. Omar lei itrach li tlotin yomin. He said, "Give me another 30 days." V'hadri l'talmudai. Let me just review my learning before I die. Damritu, they would say, Ashre misha bo lekan v'talmudo b'yodo. How fortunate is the person who comes to hear, meaning Yeshiva Shomalo, and he has his learning in his hand. So Malcham Avos gave him another 30 days. B'yom tlotin ota. He came on the 30th day. Rav Ashi said to Maikulei, what are you, a yeki? It's 30. You have to come on the 30th day. Kodoch koragle de barnoson, ve malchus nogas bechaverta fil kimelonimo. Malchamova said to him, it's now Huna Barnoson's turn. He's the Reish Galuso. He was nichnati all these years, and now it's his time to reign, and no malchus can trespass on that of another, even by a hair's breadth. In that month, Rav Ashi had a chance to plan his own funeral. I guess for some it's a fantasy. So he brought in the eulogizers and asked them what they would say, and they were very prolific in what they would say about Rav Ashi. If fire has consumed the great cedars, then what hope does the Ezovei Kir, the hyssops, the wool shrubs have? And Rav Ashi said they should all can it, not say it. In the end, all that was said about Rav Ashi, it's a beautiful nechama in any event, in Moinkot, that Chofeim at Beis, Amino, all they said was, Bechula Aveilim, Velola Aveda. Cry for the mourners, but not for the one who's lost. Shehila Menucha, Ve'anula Anocha. Because the one who's lost has now gone to his Menucha, his eternal rest. He's not lost anything. But the Aveilim have lost, and they're the ones who are gripped by the moaning and the sighing. For some reason, I couldn't figure out, Rav Ashi's tomb is traditionally placed now right on the border between Israel and Lebanon, such that at very recent times, in the year 2000, when Israel fled Lebanon in the dead of night, there was a final struggle over which country would have sovereignty over the tomb of Rav Ashi. It's right outside Kibbutz Manara, and in fact the UN then, certifying the new boundary, placed the boundary right down the middle of Rav Ashi's grave. So in fact, it's right on the border. Different parts of the grave are the border between Israel and Lebanon today, outside Kibbutz Manara. What the significance of that is, it's lost to me. But in fact, Rav Ashi's sons continued his work together with and then after Ravino. But it's the Jewish people who really continue Rav Ashi's work and bring to life his achievements every time we open the Talmud that he composed, Yehi Zichro Baruch. I thank you all for coming. We meet again now in a few weeks. Next week I have some family business to take care of, and then it's Hanukkah, so we'll have right after Hanukkah, December 13th, we'll meet again, looking at the centurion of the 6th century. Give me a couple weeks to figure out who was the centurion of the 6th century. I thank you all very much.